What's up, fam? Wealth Weekend is upon us, and I'm inviting you as one of my new official rich relatives to what I'm affectionately calling the Rich Relative Reunion. It's like your family reunion, but make it wealth. So I hope you're excited for all of the experiences, the entertainment, and the education that awaits you in Atlanta, Georgia in July. I can't wait to see you there. And just beat me there. Don't meet me there. Peace.
It was like 2 a.m, and I just had this excruciating pain in my back. And I just drove myself to the emergency. I can barely leave the house. I can't stand up straight. Mm-hmm. Just excruciating pain. I mean, at this point, with the level of pain I was feeling, I was like, my life's on the line.
I think you'll be pleasantly surprised about what you'll learn in regards to his family, his spirituality, and some of the hardships that he's had to endure in order to arrive at this point of success.
And that's what kind of led to eventually, like, the doctors giving me an MRI and then noticing that I had the tumor in my spine.
How are you feeling? What's the state of your mental and emotional well-being?
In this very moment?
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's calm. Mm-hmm. A little bit nervous, believe it or not. I'm not normally on this side of the, or not often on mm-hmm. this side of the equation. But just excited to be able to share a little bit more about myself that most people probably don't know.
Okay. You recently celebrated a birthday.
Mm-hmm.
At this stage of your life, can you describe the significance of this milestone?
For me, if I had to define it, I would say this is my year of refinement.
Right? Okay.
I've tested a lot of things. I've tried a lot of new things. I feel like I'm in a space where I'm pretty clear, at least at this moment, of what I want to do.
Okay.
And I just want to continue to distill down and refine what I know to be true. I want to create more space, even more space. My son's getting older. He's getting a personality. So creating more space to just show up for him in meaningful ways. Mm-hmm. And that's if I had to put it into words, that's what I would say.
As a child, did you feel celebrated, seen, and heard like you do today?
I would say no. I feel like a lot of my childhood was focused on survival. My mom and dad got separated pretty early, and she started dating a gentleman who, of course, she didn't know, ended up getting hooked on drugs, and a lot of our childhood was spent, like, trying to get away from that situation. And for me, birthdays, I don't know, they just weren't a priority, right? It's like when you're moving from apartment to apartment to staying in a motel for a few weeks while you still got elementary school. It's hard to think about birthdays being of any significance. So I never really prioritized it. My wife kind of forced me, I would say, to start celebrating. Because if it were up to me, like, even this year, like, I didn't know anything about what I was doing until the day of my birthday. She's like, your whole schedule is blocked off. You're doing this and this morning. Like, I had no plans of doing anything. Yeah.
Tell me a story about that would illustrate how love was expressed in your household. So I think at a high level, we know about the responsibilities you shouldered. Mm-hmm. We know about the relationship dynamic within your family. Mm-hmm. But were there pockets and moments where you did feel treasured or loved? And what's a story that paints that picture?
Yeah, I think my mom is she's a very big acts of service person, right? So I don't think there were a ton of times where we just like explicitly said, I love you, and we hugged each other and gave each other big kisses, but she would always show up for me. One thing that sticks out to me is I wanted to get better at basketball when I was younger. And I know in hindsight, looking back, it was probably a stretch, but one Christmas she got me a basketball going. It was like just the most amazing thing ever. Cause mm-hmm. I mean, looking back, I know that had to be a stretch for her. And she just wanted me to have that. And I had been asking her all year long, and she got it. And so it just let me know that she really wanted me to have something that meant a lot to me, even in the midst of all of our circumstances.
I love that. Your mom's American, your father's Ghanaian, mm-hmm. right? Can you tell me how your family experiences, traditions, culture yeah. has impacted your approach towards business?
Yeah, so I would say I grew up mainly with my mom. So a lot of our culture and traditions, I would say, pretty traditional to standard American stuff. Mm. You know, Thanksgiving is huge in our family to the point where when me and my wife first started dating, I was like, yeah, let's do Thanksgiving with my family, Christmas with your family. She didn't know why. I just
Yeah.
Totally, because I didn't know if her family could cook. So I was like, let's let's stay with my family. But yeah, I would say traditional-wise, it's pretty standard, I would say, in that regard, to traditional American culture. How it's influenced my business. I would say that I do value family a lot. I mm-hmm. value relationships. So I try to create that environment within my company. I try mm-hmm. to create that environment within my client ecosystem. We do a lot of events so that they can connect. And I would say just that tight-knit community family feel is important to me.
Entrepreneurialism has been a big part of your ethos and your personality since you were a child. Mm-hmm. What are some early memories of this skill set? So oftentimes we can look at an adult mm-hmm. and if we were to look at all the dots that connect their life, it's like, oh my gosh, of course he's an astronaut. Of course he's a doctor. What are some of those early signs of the skill set of, you know, that would depict your love for numbers or helping mm-hmm. people or business?
Yeah. So some of my earliest memories. So I would, you know, cut grass around the neighborhood, even though I think I was kind of allergic to cutting grass. That was not the smartest thing, but I would cut grass around the neighborhood. And I would, you know, get a little money for odds and end jobs. I would help people detail cars. I would make money in that regard. But the funny part that really connects to my story now is my family knew that I would like get money and I would like just kind of hoard it. I wouldn't spend it. I wouldn't buy toys. I wouldn't buy candy. Mm-hmm. And I had my aunts and uncles ask to borrow money from me, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm in elementary school.
Yeah.
And at the time,
how much money are you tracking for them to borrow money from you?
I mean, I had a few hundred dollars, you know, right. elementary school, you know, and they would need to borrow 50 or 60 or whatever the case may be. And the funny part about it, I didn't know the term interest, but all I knew was like, if I give you, you know, $50, you should probably give me more money back whenever you pay me back. And so I think that was kind of like an early indication that I just understood finances, understood the importance of just money management, because I could have went out and bought toys and candy and all sorts of stuff, but I made money in little odds and end ways and kept the money and ended up loaning it out to my family members.
You would loan it out to your family members, but I also know that you shouldered a lot of financial responsibility. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, so being that my mom and dad got separated early, you know, I was the one of two siblings in my household. I was the son. And I remember like buying our first microwave from one of the apartments that we had and just taking on, you know, the responsibility to just show up for my mom in ways like she would never explicitly say like, we don't have this or we don't have that. But I would just kind of pay attention to certain things. Like you would go to your friend's house and it's like, well, they have a microwave. They have this. Mm-hmm. And then I would take it upon myself. I think that is what shaped my decision to not spend my money, because it's like maybe mom might need me to do something with it. And so I think just the fact that my mom kind of struggled financially at certain points, it made me want to be a good steward over the money that I did have at an early age.
Did you ever hold on to any resentment? And how did these experiences shape what it meant to be a man?
I don't think I held on to much resentment. Mm-hmm. I felt like my mom certainly did what she could and what she was capable of. And I was content with that. I was okay with that. Mm-hmm. I think how it showed up for me early on in my career and just life in general and as a man is I did kind of operate out of scarcity for a while. Like I was overly frugal, but out of this sense of fear of going back, right? Like I don't want to ever be in this situation, so I need to save as much money as I possibly can because I never know what's going to come up, right? Versus walking in abundance and feeling like, all right, well, you're going to be okay. You have the skill set. You have the capability to continue to earn more money. Mm-hmm. Why are you afraid to live your life, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that did show up for me, I would say, in the early part of my career and just early manhood.
Okay, I want to stay on the topic of manhood first for a moment. I feel like the podcast landscape has created gender wars, right? You can scroll on your feed and at any given time, you can see a lot of podcasts that talk about relational issues divide the Black family.
Yeah.
But what I really love about your platform is that you bring us together and you provide tools to help us make informed decisions. Mm-hmm. And so I want to know through the lens of a husband and a father, what is your role within the home?
My role within the home is, I always say, I don't want my son to have to look past the front porch for motivation, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be a guiding light for, not to say that he has to do exactly what I do, but to know that what he wants to become, he can see that through me, right? Within the role of the home, my role is to be a supporter of my wife. My wife is, you know, just as ambitious as I am, and let her know that that is supported, that she can be whatever she wants to be, and just to be an example for my son. I think that's the biggest thing for me right now, is to know that he is watching my every move, even at 2 years old, like mm-hmm. everything I do, like
yeah.
he's walking around in my shoes, about to fall over. And so it's just knowing that I have those eyes on me, and the integrity is not, I mean, people often say like doing the right thing when nobody's looking, but mm-hmm. what I always say is integrity is more so like nobody else will know, but you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that should be enough, right? That should be the reason why you show up the way that you want to show up. And I try to exhibit that in my household, right? I don't want to ever say anything on the internet or online and my wife looking at me sideways like,
yeah,
ain't what you doing here, right? So just complete alignment across the board in terms of how I show up for my family, how I show up as a husband, how I show up as a father, and just being an overall leader.
Okay, that leads me to my next question. Mm-hmm. You are teaching people how to rewrite their money story. Mm-hmm. Our money story is formed as young as 2, 3, and 4 years old.
Wow.
And it's defined as how our childhood impacts mm-hmm. our core memories around money. So what we mm-hmm. listen to, what we watch, and what we absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Reflecting on your son, what mm-hmm. are the key elements of his story that you are currently shaping?
The key elements of his story that I'm shaping is helping him connect the dots that labor is not mutually exclusive with money. Right. So mm-hmm. like as he gets older, even now, like every morning, like we read a book before he goes to school when I'm in town. And I want him to connect the dots that when I learn, when I pour into my mind, right, that is giving me the resources to ultimately be able to attract and make more money. Versus like when he gets old enough to do chores or clean around the house, I'm not going to pay him to do chores. What I am going to pay him for is learning. Right. So that he can connect that dot. Like, OK, if I prioritize becoming a better person, learning new skills, learning new things, that is going to help me attract more financial resources. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, emotional intelligence, I think, is the number one thing that I want to help him learn. So obviously he's 2 years old now, so he's in that phase of, you know, they say the terrible twos. I don't think he's terrible, but he's in the phase of wanting what he wants, right? And he's still yeah. so young and he can't necessarily communicate that. So I really want him to be able to articulate how he's feeling, because mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I feel like behavior is just the inability to express what, certain behaviors are the inability to express what you want to say. And I feel like the more he can express himself, that in and of itself is going to become a skill set for him to be able to attract the life and the financial resource that he wants.
You didn't grow up hearing I love yous or getting a lot of hugs and kisses.
Mm-hmm.
But are you changing this narrative so he knows what this looks like in your home?
100%. And whatever I am not doing, my wife is making up for sure. But no, I'm definitely changing that. Because I can see just how, like, if you don't have love and comfort in the home, mm-hmm. right, that probably impacts your confidence, right, to be able to go out into the world. Because, like, I'm not even supported and loved, or at least it's not vocalized here.
Mm-hmm.
So anything he does, like, I always try to celebrate him, let him know that I'm proud of him. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely telling him I love him every day, hugging him, kissing him every single morning. So. Yes, we're rewriting that story.
I have a parenting question.
Yeah.
Do you believe in celebrating participant ribbons?
No.
Tell me why.
I think it doesn't set you up for success in society, mm-hmm. right? I believe in acknowledging your efforts, mm-hmm. right? But I think that if we give you participation trophies,
mm-hmm.
that's going to give you a distorted view of how the world actually works. So I'm not a fan. My wife, on the other hand, we're still working on her.
Celebrate everything,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Okay. Your house could not be a home without your wife. So I want to make sure that I acknowledge her.
Yes.
What I want to know is, take me back to December 2015, because from what I understand, your vows were tested really early in your marriage.
Yeah. Ooh, that's yeah. I mean, we had to live the vows very, very immediately. So we got married September of 2015. Mm. And then in December, I was ultimately diagnosed with a giant cell tumor in my thoracic spine. Basically, all that means is I had a tumor that was growing in my 9th vertebrae that fractured it, right?
Wait, was this a feeling? Could you not walk? How did you even know something was wrong?
Yeah, so I would say, so February, it's probably January. Well, actually, I'll go back. So July of 2014, mm-hmm. I went out for a run, which was normally just typical. And I was like, man, it's a little bit nagging. But mm-hmm. when you work out pretty often, you know, you think that maybe you tweak something, right? And I'm not the person that avoids the doctor, so I would go get a massage, and then that wouldn't work. I even bought a new mattress. I was like, okay, mm-hmm. it's time to upgrade the mattress finally. Mm-hmm. Just trying to do, like, things that I thought would help. And I had just this little nagging pain. That was, like, the year before. Then the top of the year, I think it was, like, a couple weeks before her birthday, actually. It was like 2 a.m. and I just had this excruciating pain in my back. And I just drove myself to the emergency room because we weren't living together at the time. And so I drove myself to the emergency room, and the doctor still didn't quite know what was going on. They just thought, you know, they gave me some BS suggestion of what it could possibly be. And so then I'm still continuing to try stuff. I'm going to pain management doctors. I'm going to physical therapists just to figure out, like, what's going on. But I can still kind of go about my life, right? I was still even working out. And then fast forward to November, that's when it got to the point where it was like, I can barely leave the house, can't stand up straight, just excruciating pain, can't sleep. And that's what kind of led to eventually, like, the doctors giving me an MRI and then noticing that I had the tumor in my spine.
But before you came to that conclusion, you were misdiagnosed several times, right?
Yeah.
And so you had to advocate for yourself. What did that look like? How did it feel to have your, like, when you would raise your hand to have it denied?
Yeah. It felt discouraging because they're the experts, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I know what I'm feeling, and it's like, pain can only be described by the person experiencing it, right? Like, no one can tell you, like, that you don't feel this way or that you do feel this way, right? So I'm telling them, like, this can't be whatever you're suggesting because it's not in alignment with how I'm feeling. Mm-hmm. Right. And so for them to say, oh, and just to write it off or want to give me painkillers or say, well, it's probably this and you just haven't experienced it before, so, and it's hard, it was a little bit frustrating. But I mean, at this point, with the level of pain I was feeling, I was like, my life's on the line, right? Like, I can't, like, they were basically telling me that this is just your new normal. Like, you're just going to have to, like, deal with it. And I'm like, well, it can't be because I can't, I mean, I can't see myself sustaining this, right?
And you're still relatively young.
Yeah, I'm 20, 28 at the time, right? So I'm just like, there's no way. And so that alone, I was forced to advocate because I was literally in excruciating pain day in and day out. They were telling me that this is going to be my new normal. Mm-hmm. And I was doing my own research, and I would say about maybe 60% of the symptoms of what I was experiencing overlapped with what they were saying. I was like, where I come from, a 60 is failing, right? Like, there's still a lot to be left to the imagination, and I want to make sure that this is accurate, right? Like, is there anything else we can do? And then eventually, right, it led to me getting the proper diagnosis.
How did your ability to advocate for yourself shape the way you navigate challenges beyond the healthcare system? Because in the real world, you also have to advocate for yourself. You have to question the things that you're taught in the classroom, in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So was that a seed that was planted where you're like, wait, now I'm looking at the world differently?
Yeah. I think even just on, and I was just talking about this to my wife the other day, just even on the simplest level, just always living in your truth, right? So it's like, if I'm at a restaurant and the food wasn't as good as I thought it was, I'm not going to say that. Most people just say, oh, it's okay. And then they talk amongst each other. Like, oh, it was terrible. I'm going to gracefully let the server, the waiter know, like, hey, actually, no, it wasn't. I didn't really love this. It was a little bit too salty. So that, because if I was a restaurant owner, right, I'd actually want to know.
Right.
Because I did it just 2 days ago, my birthday. And he's like, thank you so much. I've been telling the chef for 3 months that he has to get it figured out. Mm. And so just in every aspect of my life, if I feel an inkling of, this is what I need to say. Actually, before we started this, you had a similar moment, right? Like, if I am feeling it, I need to say it.
Yeah.
Right? And I felt like that allows me to attract the right people. It allows me to walk in my authenticity and my truth at all times.
Yeah. They say the best decision you'll ever make is choosing the right partner. Mm-hmm. Tell me how you got through this difficult time together.
Yeah.
And did it reinforce your vows and why you chose your wife to be by your side?
Yeah. I mean, like I said, she lived up to our vows relatively immediately. And it absolutely reinforced. I mean, to go from being, you know, a 28-year-old man and the best shape of your life to, you know, losing 20 pounds and being 20, 30 pounds and being like just a frail reflection of yourself and having someone who is your new spouse essentially having to assist you as if you were a 75-year-old man in certain ways. And you all can read between the lines, right? But yeah, I mean, it just really reinforced that she was who I thought she was. When I'm moving around a mile a minute, she's always like encouraging me to slow down and check in with like people that I care about, because relationships are the breadcrumbs to your destiny. And so like, you never want to like overlook or be moving so fast that you forget like that these are the relationships and the people that are going to shape just how you live your life. And so she's a gem. I can't say enough positive.
I love that for you. Yeah. What do you wish more Black women understood about nurturing, loving, and creating safe spaces for Black men?
That is a good one. The first thing is, and I've said generally speaking for men, but we'll speak for Black men, like we shoulder a lot, right? And so I think that like not settling for the, when you ask the first, how are you doing? I'm okay, right?
Yeah.
And just, and digging a little deeper. Like they want, we want to talk about it, right? But just
you
letting
don't always
them
have the language or the tools.
Exactly. And just being okay, knowing that like, we're not always going to initially volunteer, but it's okay to continue to ask the questions and nudge us, because ultimately we do want to talk about it. We just don't know how. So I think that's important to know. I think it's also important to know, to just know that you can be the most boss, successful, amazing woman in the world, but at home, you can let your guard down and just be his significant other, his sweetheart, his babe, whatever, you know, whatever names you call each other, right? Like, it's okay. Like, you don't have to have that same energy at the house. And it's not, and most importantly, it's not a competition, right? Like, if anything, we're competing against the world and we're on the same team, but it's not a, you know, you got the bigger check, I got the bigger check, you know, like, it's none of that. Like, how can we use our collective energy, our collective skill sets, our collective resources to amplify the life we want together?
I want to talk about faith. I want to know, what role does God or spirituality play in your life? And during downtimes, have you questioned your faith?
Great question. So for me, faith is a guiding light for my decisions. All of the things I do, even down to this you know, collect campaign they're about to launch, I'd never look at it as George is this masterful marketing guru. It's just divine downloads. God is gifting me with the vision, and it's my job to steward it to make it come to life, right? And so I think faith is at the bedrock of everything that I do. Every morning I meditate and I listen to God, and then I immediately pray and I talk to God. So for me, it's a very integral part of my relationship, because I feel like there's certain things that are just are too big to shoulder on your own, and you need a guiding light and a guiding principle, principles to be able to get to accomplish the things you want to accomplish. So for me, it's a big part of what I do.
When were you first introduced to your faith? Like, at what point of your journey did it become important?
I got baptized probably, I want to say like middle, no, it was elementary school, probably like third grade.
Okay.
Yeah, so it got introduced pretty early, but it was introduced in the sense of like, my grandma grew up in the church.
Yeah.
My mom grew up in the church.
Of course.
And then it's like, okay, well, you're going to do it too, right? But I would say that I had started to create an intentional relationship and learn for myself probably early college, right? Actually, I think I took a class like freshman year. I was like, I want to understand the Bible a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to be convicted myself, right? I didn't want to just like, I love my mom, I love my grandma, but I wanted to know
it for yourself. Yeah.
Right? So I would say like the beginning of college is when I started my personal journey, my faith.
If 2015 was the year that, let's say, strengthened your faith, how would you describe 2017? And can you walk me through the paradigm shift that you experienced while in Ghana?
I would say that in 2017, it gave me a lot of grace, because there was some resentment for my relationship with my father. Without context, right? So for me, I was interpreting it as, all right, I'm here in the United States with my mom. We've had a lot of moments of struggle. Where are you, right? We got a chance to obviously visit a couple of times, but it's like, okay, cool. It's like, yeah, you give us some cash before we go back home. But like, what does that really mean in the grand scheme of things? So there was a lot of resentment before I went to Ghana in 2017. Like, so because I would say like I was this happy, you know, kid that was excited to go see his father in elementary school, because we would go, like, you know, I think we went like 3 summers in a row when I was in elementary school.
Okay.
Then after that, like, we didn't go back for some reason. It was like some green card issues or whatever with him or whatever. But more of the story is, I would say, like, from high, especially in high school, when I'm like trying to figure out manhood and he's not here, I'm just like, where you at? And then as I'm starting to figure it out, the resentment is showing up, like, well, I didn't need you anyway. At least that's the defense mechanism I'm telling myself. So kind of wrote the relationship off, but in a way where it's like, I didn't necessarily like speak negatively of him. Mm-hmm. I just didn't put any effort to try to nurture the relationship at all. Right. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that's what it would be for the rest of my life. And then fast forward 2017, he passes away. I kind of don't know how to process it at first. But my sister, because she's 3.5 years older than me, she had a little bit more time with him than I did. And she's naturally most girl, daddy's girl. So she had a different outlook on the relationship than I did. So we both went over there for the funeral. And when I got a chance to meet some of my other family members from that side, even siblings. So I do have some half siblings that I didn't grow up with. It helped give me a lot of grace and perspective that I just didn't have. I had one side of the story, which did create some questions when I came back from my mom. But after that, I was able to kind of release some of the energy that I had towards that relationship and understand it a little bit better.
Do you have any understanding of your father's money principles or values?
Yeah. And that was some of the interesting things I learned there. I learned that he's always been a tried and true entrepreneur. So it's in my DNA. My mom, again, told me, like, after the fact, she was like, I always give her credit. I was like, Mom, thank you for, like, for being who you are so that I could be who I am. She's like, honestly, it's kind of, you get that from your dad. Yeah. I was like, well, why didn't you tell me that before?
Yeah.
But he's definitely been he was very entrepreneurial. He was very frugal as well and just believed a lot in education. But I would say those are some of the things that I now know that I got from him.
As a result of this experience, did it trigger the idea that you should take legacy planning more serious, or was this a seed that was already planted before 2017?
I would say that it definitely amplified it. I think I took it serious before 2017 because of my own experience, right? Because of me, like, you know, being in the hospital and having this extensive surgery. And even though I didn't have a child yet, I just knew that I didn't want my wife to be in a bad situation. And I had been a financial advisor since 2011. So I already kind of understood and believed in the principles of estate planning and legacy planning. But for sure, I would say in 2017, just knowing, because he, you know, died, you know, early 60s, that life is, you know, fleeting, right? And that you want to make sure that you have your legacy protected. Because for me, it's like, we truly live in a great society when a man or woman plants a seed for a tree whose shade they'll never sit under.
Yeah.
So it gives me a lot of solace knowing that the things I'm doing right now, my son will be able to thrive even when I'm not here, if I'm not here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your father's absence, who were the men that stepped in as a guiding light, if any?
Yeah. My uncle, who actually shares a birthday with me, he actually encouraged my mom. So I was supposed to originally be born on April 6th. And so he was like, I think it was like April 6th, like 11:50. He was like, come on, just 10 more minutes. So he's always been a great role model for me. When I talked about detailing cars earlier, it was his business. So I would help him. And what he would do is he would always invite me out to the coldest, most brutal mornings to wash cars. He's like, see, this is why you don't want to do manual labor. He's like, I didn't have someone to warn me or teach me, but I know that you'll have a better chance than I did. So he was really hard on me in that sense, but only because he wanted better for me. And so he was definitely a guiding light. He bought me my first pair of Air Jordans that I wanted so bad. And then my stepdad, he's also an entrepreneur in many rights. So I got a chance to kind of get a glimpse of how he moved and how some of the autonomy that he had. Although I was very reluctant for many years of the relationship because of what I saw my mom experience with her boyfriend, right? So I gave him the hardest time ever. But ultimately, when it's all said and done, he definitely provided a lot of guiding light and principles as a man.
Speaking of principles, I want to know, what is your vision for your son's future? What is the value that you place on education? And will you raise him to believe that he can color outside the lines or will you condition him to believe that he should stay within them?
Yeah, so I'll start with the first part of the question. So the legacy and I guess the roadmap that I'm creating for him is to let him know that, like, I literally named him Legend, right? To let him know that, like, not to sound cliche, but the sky is the limit, right? And that anything he wants to accomplish, that if he puts his mind to it and he works hard and he acquires the skills, that it's possible. And I'm demonstrating that through my actions. Because kids, at the end of the day, the best thing I can do is to be who I say I am so that he has an example of what it looks like, right? So I feel like I'm instilling that by my own actions. As far as coloring within, outside of, I 100% want him to color outside the lines. I want, because at the end of the day, I feel like a man, another man are, made the rules, right? So who said that those are the rules, right? I want you to chart your own path. I want you to know that, you know, it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to learn. It's okay to try new things. And okay to be yourself, right? We have a collection called Be You, They'll Adjust, right? In our merch store, because like I want him to know that being who he is enough, right? Like you don't have to change or conform for anybody else. If you want to be quirky, fun, you have little fun things.
Nerdy, be into science, coding, all like,
that. You know what I mean? I want him to know that like that's okay. It's cool to be smart. Right? And we see that, and you know that as an adult. When you're a kid, it's like, no, but
it's not cool.
Kids are doing this, right? I want him to know early to know it's cool to be smart.
Describe your university experience. Were you still shouldering a lot of responsibilities at home?
So that's a great question. Right before I left, you asked me stuff I've never shared ever. right before I left for college, I remember that. Something happened. I think my mom had got laid off like a year and a half prior or something like that, right? And so we were actually staying with a family friend from the church at the time. So I didn't even really have what I consider to be my own space or my own room right before I went to college. I remember getting the acceptance letter and being excited. But I was really excited because it's like, well, may I finally get something that's my own. I feel like there were so many moments where we were like moving around and I could never, or just when I got comfortable, like we had, I was so proud of her. Like we got this house in Charlotte, and then like she got laid off. So I was decorating my room and I was super excited. And I think maybe a year and a half came into that situation. We had to move to the family friend's house because she got laid off. And so I just remember being excited to go to school, not necessarily because I was just excited to go to school. It's like, oh, I get at least for a year, right? Or I get a space that's mine that I can control and that nobody can take from me, right? So as far as shouldering responsibilities, I think at the time, my mom was with my now stepdad, so I didn't feel as much of a burden as I had historically felt, but I still knew that I wanted more for her. I felt like my pursuit in college wasn't just for me. It was like, all right, how can I do what I need to do so that I can, you know, have enough to make sure that she's good, make sure that I'm good. And that had always been my plan. I was like, I got to make sure that my mom is retired because, you know, she's, I'm not sure if she's going to have it figured out. And I want to make sure that I could be that, you know, that rock for her. And so that kind of shaped my decisions on, you know, what I decided to do in school and the majors I pursued because I wanted to pursue something I feel like could make a decent enough income to help her out.
But what was the state of your business acumen and financial lens during this time? Was it still in development or did you self-study? Like, how did you accelerate your knowledge?
Yeah, I actually had a good friend of mine. His name is Kenny Conwell, and he got into like the in financial services industry pretty early from an entrepreneurial standpoint. So I had learned a lot from him and I started doing some odds and ends. Like I was actually, I'm not sure if you heard of prepaid legal, but I started selling prepaid legal in college. Okay. And so that kind of like sharpened my business acumen, asking random friends, like, I know you're in college, but do you want a legal plan? But I made enough money to pay for my Miami trip, though, so that worked. Okay. So I would just do different things that would sharpen my skills. But it was definitely 100% still in development. Actually, funny story, I got screenshots to this day where I had bought like some Lacoste shirts from eBay and wanted to resell them. Mm-hmm. But let's just say my sales language wasn't as polished and I was pretty aggressively on Facebook. And it wasn't called DMs, whatever it was called at the time. Trying to push these shirts. Like, yo, you want these shirts or nah? Like, you know what I'm saying? And I don't even know if they were real. So sorry if you bought a fake Lacoste shirt from me. But yeah, I always had that itch of like, how can I, you know, make some extra money? Yeah. And so, but it was definitely still in development for sure.
You and your mom have been through a lot. Mm-hmm. And I want to know, what is your advice for people who also share the title First Different Only? First Different Only in our families to create mm-hmm. pathways to earn a significant income, to, you know, shoulder responsibility. I'm sure there are people who are grappling with resentment and holding right. on to anger and asking God why them. And, mm-hmm. You know, it's an uncharted path. Right. So what advice do you have for individuals who, I mean, it seems like, you know, you grew through it.
Yeah.
And you're on the other side, but, mm-hmm. you know, individuals who may feel stuck in this cycle of having to carry their family on their back.
Yeah. I would say, and it's not something that I think I necessarily did, but in hindsight, it's, I think, advice that I would give. Mm-hmm. I would encourage them to be more vulnerable and invite their family into the reality mm-hmm. of what it takes to be who they are, mm-hmm. right? Because a lot of times, like, they're getting the same glimpses that social media, oh, my daughter or my son is so successful and they got it all figured out and it's so easy for them.
Yeah.
No, it's not. Yeah. It's not easy for me and it's very hard for me, but I have so much love for you that mm-hmm. I want to show it for you in this way. So giving them more of an inside look and a front row seat to what you're experiencing mm-hmm. and the gravity of it, just so that they can understand, like, the nature of the sacrifice and the nature of what it takes to be you. Because I feel like sometimes, you know, you get these requests for, you know, for money or these the different oh, things. Yeah. And it's just like, it's just, of course you got
mortgage
it.
Mortgage payments.
Right? You know what I'm saying? Of course you got it. And they just don't understand, well, I kind of have a team now and I have people that have the support to make this business happen. Yeah. I got to kind of still also support myself. And there's ebbs and flows in business. It's not mm-hmm. always up and to the right. And just helping them understand that, which you have to be okay with, because part of you maybe likes the idea of them seeing you as this well-polished, all-put-together mm-hmm. person.
Yeah.
Right? And so being willing to, you know, reveal to them, like, well, no, I'm still trying to figure it out too in many ways. And that doesn't mean that I'm still only gonna show up for you the way that I want to show up for you. It's not like you're forcing me to do anything, but I want you to understand that it's not easy. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I could use a little more support. Sometimes I could be, it would be nice to get a phone call and checking on me,
yeah.
right? Versus just asking what I can do for somebody, right? And letting mm-hmm. them know that that's needed. Sometimes they just don't think you need it. They think you're invincible. They think you're Superman or Superwoman. And that's their only worldview, unless you help them understand that there's more to the story.
I really like that. Okay, earlier we spoke about shaping our money stories, mm-hmm. but clients are coming to you when they're grown adults. And I wanna know, what is your checks and balances to do a financial health assessment?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What are some important questions someone needs to ask themselves before getting ready to have the external success? What does the internal work look like?
So I think that it's important to, number one, ask yourself, like, is your spending aligned with what you say you value? Mm-hmm. Because if you were to think about what you say you value, you logged into your online banking, is there alignment, right? But the aha moment that should come from that is, do you actually know what you value? Because if you don't know, then you're just going to be looking at what everybody else is doing, all their highlight reels, and assuming that you need to be doing those things versus asking yourself, how do I define success? How do I define freedom? How do I define fulfillment? How do I define happiness, peace, et cetera? Mm-hmm. Because that's more of the qualitative aspect of financial planning, right?
Yeah.
But people like to think of it of X's and O's of, like, how much money is coming in, how much money is coming out. I mean, anybody can understand that, right? Mm-hmm. That's pretty fundamental. But what really shifted my paradigm and my journey and how I educate people on building wealth is, I was at this conference in, like, 2011, one of the first conferences I went to, and the lady said that in 2011, 1 billion drill bits were sold. And I was like, well, who cares about drill bits? And she was like, well, let's just assume that those drill bits were used to hang up artwork like we see in this house here. But what would you say if I told you that nobody cared about the drill bits and nobody cared about the artwork? They cared about the feeling that they got when they walked in the room where the picture was hung. And money is the same way, right? It doesn't matter if you have $1 million in your bank account. It doesn't matter if it's if you have a Roth IRA or 401k. Those are all just means to an end. What matters is you have to define what you want to do with the money, right? Who do you want to be? Where do you want to go? Who do you want to help? And once you can shape that and answer those questions, then we can kind of chart a path towards, how do we align your resources to what matters most to you? Because if not, then you'll just be checking boxes and you'll never really be fulfilled.
That's so crazy that you said that. I was going to ask, how do you create, like the position that you're in, you understand what's at stake. Mm-hmm. How do you create a sense of urgency as opposed to, I'm an entrepreneur, I know this is what I need to do, and I'm just going to check a box?
Yeah. I think it's really about, like, especially entrepreneurs, right? Because, like, our business is our biggest investment, right? It's like, it's slowing down enough to realize that at some point, right, I don't want to be running at the pace that I'm running right now. And even though I have a great business, even though I put in the systems, like, if I don't have a plan to sell the business, or I don't have a plan to transition out of leadership, I'm not going to be able to live the lifestyle I want in perpetuity without that plan, right? And it's just slowing down long enough to understand that and making sure that it aligns with what you actually care about. Because if it aligns with what you actually care about, not just like, oh, I should invest in IRA because that's what George said on Instagram, but because, you know what? I really value travel. I want to be able to continue to see the world. I want to continue to be able to insert whatever ideal lifestyle you want to live. And then you connect the dots that by doing these activities and investing in these ways, the investments are going to produce the resources to do that. And I don't have to. I think that is the paradigm shift that people have to have. It's like, oh, okay, I'm not just doing it because that's a smart adult thing to do.
Right.
This is going to create cash flow that can cover the trip to Bali, that can make sure I can still take care of mom, and connecting that dots and seeing how it actually plays out. I think that's what does it for people.
I love that. Final question. Mm-hmm. Who are you beyond your title?
Who am I beyond my title? I'm a father. Is that a title? Is that considered a title too?
It's okay.
Okay.
Beyond your corporate title, beyond your achievements and accolades and awards, who are you?
I'm a new father who's still figuring it out every day. I'm a husband who is trying to support my wife and also not get on her nerves. I'm a brother who is super proud of my sister. She's one of my first clients. She just retired. She's 40. She's now living in Portugal. So the system does work, y'all.
Nice.
And I am just a man who wants to help transform 100,000 people's relationship with money, not so that they can look in their bank account and be satisfied with all the zeros that they see, but so that they can keep their family together, so that they can be less stressed, so that they can enjoy life from a place of abundance and not scarcity. That's who I am.
Great job.
Thank you.
We're done. That's really good.
Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Melanin Money Show. We hope that this episode was inspiring and gave you some tangible nuggets that you can walk away with and implement in real time. If you found this episode valuable, please like, subscribe, share, and consider leaving a review of this episode on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until next time.